they say hombre, holding up the bottle. Look a little closer, cigar in Moscato. An actor in improv coming from Chicago. Alto, make way for Paul Vato. Pablo, si hablo con mi taco.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. This episode is part two with John Barinholtz. We went so long in the interview that we at the Paul Vato team decided that breaking this one up into two parts would be better for you, the valued listener. So here you go, part two. Enjoy, my friend.
Bob Odenkirk was my mentor when I first moved out here, and he was very, gave me a lot of confidence, again, on the writing side. And then he came, he dusted off the performing, the sketch comedy shoes, and I went on tour with him for a little bit, and that, like, made me settle and be like, it's okay, and was able to start getting a little bit more steady work.
What was the Bob Odenkirk? Was it his show? Was it his sketch show? You were part of the ensemble, or what was it?
My friend Mort and I, Mort Burke, another really funny comedian, he came out around the same time, also worked at Moza. At one point, Moza, which is a very high-end restaurant in LA, for people who don't know, there to go, if you went into the kitchen, it was seven guys from Oaxaca, Mexico, and seven comedy nerds from Chicago. Like, that's who the kitchen was made up of.
I was going to bring that up. I was going to, like, I didn't realize that you were Mexican, you know, working at a...
Hey, honorary after working there. Like, I still talk to some of those guys. They're like, they're great dudes. They're still there. They're fucking awesome. But Mort and I had a sketch show that we did, and Bob came and saw it and loved it and was like, hey, we should write. So we were like, okay. And we would go to Bob's office, you know, every week for a couple days a week. And we'd just write sketches from him or with him. And he had stuff in the chamber that just was like, you know, he's like, I've been thinking about a sketch that it's like Glengarry Glen Ross, but instead of like high-end sales, it's all penny stocks. So like the scale of it was all like $1 to $2 of like, like, instead of talking about like getting $1,000 on the or $100,000 on the board, it was all like, I made $3 today. And like, just losers. And like, he had these things in the chamber that he'd been, I think, like percolating since the end of Mr. Show. And like, this is like before Breaking Bad. This is before everything, his next chapter, which is insane now. But like, he mentored us and kind of came out of like comedy. I wouldn't want to say retirement because he was always working, but like sketch comedy. And we did a live show with him, and we had a couple other buddies that we pulled in from Chicago on it that were funny, that could play just like, you know, designated hitters. Essentially, we knew we could play certain roles, and we did a couple comedy fests with it. We did it in LA. It was amazing. I got to write and learn how to write. That's when I say in college, when I thought I was good. Like, then I was like, oh, I wasn't. Then he taught me how to be an amazing sketch writer and just an amazing writer. Just, I'm not saying I'm an amazing writer. He is. And he taught me, here's what you have to do to get there. And he gave me the simplest piece of advice. And he said, every day you write something. And I was like, yeah, okay, that's easy. And then you start doing it and like, oh no, it's very hard. But it didn't fucking matter if that was one line or a sketch or a scene or whatever it was. Like, every day, just write. And to this day, I don't want to say I do every day, but like, I probably hit about 300 days of the year where I just at least get something out, and like, emails don't count.
Does it count if you're writing on your phone? Cause I always feel like people, or do you have to put pen to paper or?
No, like the notes in the phone. Yes. Like, I mean, multiple times where I've been sitting in a waiting room and I'm like, oh, that's a funny idea. Or this is something I want to capture. And I would write it down and like, yeah, it, on the notes pad right there and bring it out.
Cause I've got hundreds, probably thousands of ideas that, you know, they pop in your head, you write it down like, this is a funny premise. And then, you know, now when do we find the time to flesh it out? But that's wonderful, John. I think it's all such great advice. And I could see you becoming a mentor to others and passing on that, all that wonderful information. But I didn't know this. I apparently, you know, we must have just missed each other, because in 2009, at the bottom of the market, we had this great opportunity to move out to Las Vegas.
Yes.
So we just missed each other as you got to LA. I was going, you know, but I was already married by then. So I'd already been, you know, kind of separated from a lot of.
No, I remember when you went to Vegas. I remember because, oh yeah, I would hang out with you and my brother and Stassen and Hayes. I would hang out with those guys and like Scotty MacArthur, and I'd come out here. And I remember coming out here and Ike's like, Vato's moving to Vegas. And I was like, oh, fuck.
What timing? What timing? I miss you guys, man. I miss you. I miss, of course, your brother. I, you know, we chat every every now and then, but it's not as often, you know, as I'd like. But I get it, man. You guys, not only do you have these great careers going, but you also have a family. Because I know Ike's married, has a couple kids. And you, when did you get married? Because I didn't even know you were old enough to get married, buddy.
I got married in 2016. I met my wife at Mocha. I was waiting tables. And she took a summer there before her last summer of grad school. It was like her last fuck-off job. And she's amazing. She does neuropsych testing for children. And there's like neurological assessments and just like really good work, which allows me to do like the goof off work. I feel like it balances out. Like she's giving enough to society that I can go fuck around. But yeah, been married, had our first kid who will be 3 years old, 2 weeks, had our a girl, and then we had a boy in February on Ike's birthday, actually. And our boy will be 7 months in like, yesterday.
Amazing. Wait, so you have two?
Two. We have two.
You have a boy and a girl.
Boy and a girl, yeah.
So we got to start training this kid up, you know, for improv.
Yes.
And the girl too, of course.
Yes. Oh, she'll be the one. She's the one who's, she's funny. She is funny.
But isn't that funny that you kind of went through what Jim Belushi went with John Belushi, or maybe, you know, what Bill Murray's brothers might have gone through. You're going through that, what Jim went through. And then, you know, your kids will go through what Rob Belushi's gone through, you know, because he's got a famous father and a famous uncle. But yeah. It's all cyclical, my friend, I think, you know?
Yeah. And hopefully I handle myself better than Jim Belushi.
I've got some stories. No.
Me too.
And I know that maybe we're running a little bit out of time here, but your dad, Alan, well, your parents, Alan and Peggy, just wonderful people. You probably remember this, but I gave your dad one of my original headshot, which was black and white. And I think I was like, use it now. And I remember that he kept it in his office in Chicago. And I remember Ike maybe went home to visit. And he goes, why is Votto's headshot in your office?
I worked in the law office, so I saw that headshot all the time. That was my first job in Chicago. I did phones for that firm, and in my dad's office, there you were, dude. I got to tell you something crazy about my dad. I got to tell you something crazy.
The fact that he was in a movie.
Yeah, he was. Yes, he was. He was in The Chase, directed by Adam Rifkin, who's our cousin. He plays a cop who like kind of goes like this. But dude, I'll tell you something even crazier. Him and my mom moving out here, yes, to be closer to the grandchildren. But my dad, this past February through April, was out in LA filming. He got cast as a series regular on a show that is going to come out, I think, in like a few months. And it's a new Amazon show. They needed an unknown with real life legal experience. And a friend of a friend who like worked at the satellite casting office out of Chicago was like, hey, I think I saw Alan Barinholtz do improv with his sons once. And I think I remember he was an actor back in the 70s, but then gave it up to go to law school. Should we call him in? And he came out last Thanksgiving for Thanksgiving, because my parents live in the Midwest still. They come out every year. My brother and I put him on tape. We finished the tape. And we were like, this is pretty fucking good. He sent it in. An EP of the show is a buddy of ours, like reached out and was like, hey, your dad's good. We think he's going to get it. We were like, no way. He fucking got it. And like, I haven't seen it yet, but we've heard from the EP and like some other folks that like did a pretty good job. And yeah, dude, so my dad's going to move out here. And like he's going to act. He's semi-retired now from the law business. And like they were going to like kind of enjoy their golden years they have a farm in Ohio. They left Chicago. And that was going to be it. And now they've put the farm in the market. They've bought a place out here, and their golden years will be in LA with like my mom, you know, gardening, and my dad going to like 200 South La Brea for Expedia commercials.
That is brilliant. I almost want to say reverse nepotism where, but I once again, I think the Barinholtz men deserve everything that they have. It's not like it was just handed to your dad. You still put him on tape. He still got it himself,
one involved. Like, yeah, it was, this was like, they just cast him as an unknown out of Chicago, and
Can you make a call for me and see if he'll do Paul Votto Presents? Because to be honest, he's the Baron Holtz I want to talk to.
He would do it. He would do it in a heartbeat. You may have to fly here to show him how to do the tech setup. That's the only thing. He can barely FaceTime.
That's why I think I've got a new rule. I'm only interviewing younger people such as yourself, because it wasn't like we even have to do the green room, you know, on Fireside here. There's a green room where I can show you how it works. You're like, yeah I got it. Like, if people that are younger just instantly get it. You know how tech works. A funny thing about my headshot as well.
Yeah.
It also used to hang at the Old Town Ale House. It was the first photo all the way to the far right behind the bar, you know, where they had headshots. And I was walking in Los Feliz. I was walking to a bar. I forget which bar it was, the Wilderness Bar. I forget what it's called out there.
Yeah.
I was walking and I'm crossing the street and this young lady's walking. She goes, Paul Votto. And I go, that's right. And I'm like, how are you? She goes, you don't know me. I go, okay. I go, how do you know me? And she goes, I drink at the Old Town Ale House, and every, you know, 3-4 times a week, I'm sitting there staring at your headshot.
Dude, that's so funny. First of all, legendary to have your headshot up. And like, that's, there's no cooler bar in the world. That's so fucking funny. That's that's so great, man. Oh, God.
Man, thank you. A couple more things. I'm going to ask for your final thoughts, but I'm also something new that I've been kind of doing is, what do you think would be a good title for this episode? You know, normally, of course, I like to put your name out there, but is there something that you took away from this? Is there a good, not to put you on the spot, you can always, you know, DM me later, but if you have a good idea for a title for this show.
Huh. Guy, just talk about all the improv training I had, and now I can't think of a fucking thing. I don't know. To me, the most important thing that I think that I took away from just at least talking was maybe just how, like, you really have to be in this type of business for your own fun, and it has to be fun. Like, you just you have to find your own fun. Is that it?
Find your own fun. That is genius. It took us a second to get there, but you know, I put you on the spot.
Well, and before we go, I do want to obviously I'm on a show right now. I want to talk about real quick American Auto.
Of course, I've got plenty of time. But of course, the most, I've just had so much fun talking to you.
Yes, I know. Connecting. This is what happens when you see an old friend and you catch up. This is the best.
We need to talk about business. The shows that you're on, the shows that people can still see, like Chicago Party and, yes. But you're on a new show called American Auto.
Yes. American Auto. It's on NBC. It's so funny. It's from the same creator as Superstore. And I was on Superstore. I came on as like a one-off role in the first season. And I was lucky enough to, I think, thanks so much to improv, kind of like carve out a bit bigger of a role in the second season. And then a pretty steady role from season 3 and on, and love that show. It was like a family, everyone involved, amazing cast and crew. The creator was Justin Spitzer. He came to me like the second to last season of Superstore. We didn't know it was the second to last season. And he was like, hey, I have this other pilot. I think you'd be fun for one of the roles. He could have stopped talking right there. I was like, anything he would do, I'm in. I love him. And it was kind of a reverse Superstore. If Superstore is like the lives of the workers, like blue collar workers in a big box store whose, you know, everyday lives are affected by the nameless people at corporate. This show is the nameless people at corporate, and showing that, like, you know, in Superstore, I think like they're like, well, the nameless people at least know what's going on. They're competent, so they wouldn't be actively making our lives bad. And then you see this side of things. It's in the auto industry, so different industry, but you see how, you know, this world operates. And like, it's, of course, they're not competent. They're not incompetent. They're just, you know, it's just showing how, like, in this warped, you know, again, version of capitalism that we're in, how you can so easily fail upwards once you're in the machine. And it's a bunch of people who have just failed upwards and run a multi-billion dollar company. And that's very much, you know, on the brink. The auto industry is like a perfect, you know, metaphor for where we're at with like this, the divide in technology and, you know, grasping onto the old and trying to embrace the new. And this show is just so good. And it's, I'm so proud of it. I'm so happy it exists. We had 10 episodes last season. We get 13 this season, maybe 5 more. So maybe 18 total. And the cast is unreal. Anna Gasteyer is the lead. She plays the CEO. I play, talk about nepotism. I play the great grandson of the company founder. It's Payne Automotive. I'm Wesley Payne. Michael Benjamin Washington is one of the best actors I've ever seen. He's been on 30 Rock. He plays a tech guy. You have Humphrey Carr, you have Harriet Dyer, you have Ty White, you have X Mayo. Unreal cast, so much fun. And like, I hate doing PR. And if I haven't expressed it today, Vado, like while I love performing, I love talking to friends. I love coming on something like this in terms of like PR blitz. I hate it. I know that I'm good at it, but I hate it. I know that I can like be on a talk show and do that. But I've talked to my reps a long ago. I was like, I don't want to do for PR for things I'm involved with that I don't love. I was like, do a full blast for American Auto because I love the show and I will talk about it to anyone who will listen. I want to scream to the rooftops. So check it out. It's on right now. It's available on Hulu and Peacock. And it's just really funny. It very much kind of like Veep meets Superstore is the way to put it. Yeah,
I love it. It's almost surreal, you know, because I've gotten so used to seeing my friends on TV shows that you're just like, it's almost no big deal, but it is such a huge deal that you're on this show, you know, hit TV show, and it's going to go, and it's going to hopefully keep going, just like our friends over at the Goldbergs, you know, and that's it. So forgive me for even forgetting to mention the most important thing.
All good. Oh, of course. No, dude. Hey, I would love to talk to you for like the next 4 hours, my friend. We have so much to catch up on. But yes, that's I'm so super proud of that show. The other project that I want to mention that I think is very cool, it's a gluefactoryshow.com is the website. The show is the Glue Factory Show. This is the genesis of this project is so unique and so cool. I'm going to give the Cliff's Notes right now of it. Of a little over a year ago, through a mutual friend, an Australian couple contacted me and they said, hey, we had this NFT series we want to release, like meaning a series of art pieces. And we want you to do a show inspired by these art pieces. And like I had an outside understanding of NFTs at the time. Like it's digital art that you own. But like this couple, Sam and Lauren, they really had this fucking crazy game plan where they're animal lovers, especially horse lovers. Horse abuse is rampant in Australia, I guess, because they have all these like backyard horse racing rinks that like they put down horses after every race. And it's really sad. So they were already in the NFT world, like consulting and doing this. And they were like, hey, let's sell 10,000 digital art pieces depicting like comically cartoony mangled horses. And while other projects were doing this, like, you know, you've heard of the CryptoPunks and the Bored Apes. And like, I'd heard of this stuff, like on the outside, I didn't really know it. They were like, we're going to do this, but we're going to attach content to it baked in from the start, which is very different than these other projects that it was like, you have this and then you can make content from it. So they were going to sell these. Part of the sale was going to go to a horse charity. And part of the sale was going to give me a production budget to make 6 episodes of animation. So 60 minutes of animation, 6 10-minute episodes. They're like, can you create a world off inspired by these horses? I was like, it's kind of a tight box, guys, to like have me create a world of like cartoon horses. And the show is not BoJack. It's like, okay. But really quickly, I was like, oh, I know what this can be. And like, I broke the world. I brought in some of like my favorite comedy writers that I've ever worked with. And Katie Rich, Rob Belushi, Colton Dunn from Key & Peele, Jim Wise from Mad. Like I brought in all these people. I told them the game plan was like, if these sell out, we just get a production budget that I get to like show run these and make these. And sure enough, it sold out in 2 hours. Like they went on sale. They sold in 2 hours and made $3.2 million. My budget to make the show was then like $320K to make 60 minutes of animation, which is very low in terms of animation. But I had just finished Chicago Party Ant, which is on Netflix right now. And I knew through an independent model, if you found a cheap enough animator, we could come in for under $320K. And we found a mix of great animators that were able to do this. We wrote 6 hilarious scripts. We got unreal funny friends to voice these. We have like Patton Oswalt and Nikki Sullivan and Naomi Ekperigin and James Adomian and Bobby Lee, Bobby Moynihan, fucking Ted Danson. All these people came out and did voices for these things. There's these six episodes that we made and released that you can see on gluefactoryshow.com essentially serve as a proof of concept now. They exist as their own thing, but we are now taking them as a proof of concept to be like, these are six episodes of a condensed season one. We want to now, we're now going to take this out and pitch it in 2 weeks. We're taking it around the town to be like, look at this amazing writing team. Look at this cast. Look at this concept. And we're now going to hopefully put the show on TV from this insane start off of being based off of NFT art. And I honestly, like, it went from being a thing of like, I don't know what this is, guys, to like, I am so passionate about it. I told my wife, Annika, I'm like, as soon as American Auto wraps, I just want to go right into the show and start making this because it's so much fun. It's so goofy. It's short format. They're going to be like 10 to 12 minute episodes. We want to be on like, I think like Netflix or somewhere that allows short format. And we want to make these shows. We want to make these shows. I'm so excited for it.
Do you, you have a pitch deck for it? I mean, I probably don't even need it because you already have made these episodes, right?
Yeah. Like we literally have a condensed season. So I get to walk into a room with essentially a sizzle reel showing the cast we have, explaining the concept. And the deck is done because we had to create it through the process of the show. Like when I was breaking the world, I have all my notes from that. And I just turned it into a Bible. And like, everything's done. And we ran the practice pitch last week and reps are like, go with God. It's ready to go. So we're going to take this out and try to sell this sucker. And yeah, I hope to come back, you know, 6 months from now to be able to tell you that we're in production of it and talk about that show a lot more.
Well, I'd love to be a part of it because I have a couple friends that just signed a first look deal with Sony. So I would love to connect you guys if you're open to that.
Not only would I love that, before you even told me that, I was going to say, I'd love for you to be a part of it and like be a voice of a horse because we got all our friends to like voice these things and we had to do it. We had no money. So like we had to do it very quickly. Like the studio we used, we can fit you in here. So we're like, who are our friends who are in town who come and record? And we still had to follow COVID protocol through SAG. It was like crazy, but like we got all these people so quickly. And now like the format of the show is you'll see it when you check it out, but it's the TV that they're watching within the world is part of it. So like think Beavis and Butthead where like there's channel surfing. So it's just like quick bits. And then there's a larger storyline, but like, it's so much fun to like, we get to bring in all our friends to do like, this is why we want to blow it out into show now. Cause we have like 100 people we want to bring in to be like, oh, we know this person can do this bit. I know Vado can do this bit. Like I would love for you to do it.
It would be an honor to just even to audition. It's one of those things where I never expect anyone to hand me anything, but I'd love the opportunity.
Yes.
To audition, John. This is, thank you.
This is what we call in the business offer only. It's a straight talk for you.
I only accept offer only and that's it. Oh my goodness. You mentioned Chicago Party Ant.
Yes.
Which, if you want to talk a little bit about that, I love the fact that it came out, it's my understanding, and please correct me if I'm wrong, out of a Twitter account, basically. But then you guys really brought it to life. And I don't know who, I know Dave Stassen was involved, and you were one of the voices. I don't know if you were also producing or not. But could you talk a little bit about Chicago Party Ant?
Absolutely. So it was one of my good friends at the time, like 3 years ago now, it's 2022. Yeah. The account's been around for about 5 years. And he started this account just because he was out here in LA and he was lonely. And it like reminded him of home to do like local bits from Chicago. Right. So he created this persona of a Chicago party ant, which is it's a woman of a certain age who has a certain haircut. Like we know this woman, like she is, if you've been in Chicago, you've definitely seen her anywhere in the Midwest. You've seen her, but there's also like, there's a Miami version of her. There's a version everywhere around the world, but really kind of inside baseball, Chicago humor. At first, the account kind of took off. People like, you know, myself, like I know who it was. My brother knew who it was, but we would like engage with it on Twitter. Then you start having like people like Colbert engage with her and like the famous Chicagoans. And it was like anyone who had been through Chicago got the bits. It was all like very local bits, very funny. And the account kind of blew up, you know, as far as Twitter goes. I mean, it got to like 15,000 followers pretty quickly. And then like doubled that pretty quickly. And it just existed. And then this producer, Richie Schwartz out here, wanted to find out who it was. And everyone thought it was my good friend, Katie Rich. Everyone thought it was Katie Rich just because the tone of it. Katie Rich, amazing SNL Weekend Update head writer for 8 years. The tone of it was very much, you know, I could see it being in her voice. So people thought it was Katie, and Katie knew who it was too. And Katie was like, no, not me. And it was our buddy, Chris. So this producer, Richie Schwartz, found out who it was, met with Chris and said, hey, you should do something with this. And I think my company should be the one to do it. So Richie's production company kind of took this under his wing and said it should be an animated show, and said, we have to assemble, like, we have to create the show. So Chris was one of my partners at the time and other things. And so Chris and Richie met with Ike and Dave to kind of as another set of EPs on this, right? And Ike had already engaged with this account a bunch. It could be a story in the pitch of like how this all came to life. And Ike and Dave is like, they were like, we're in, like, we'll be the EPs. Who's going to create this? Who's going to write this? So I was brought in for two reasons. A, because everyone thought it was her to begin with. And it is a fucking female voice. It's the Chicago Party Aunt. We were like, we need Katie Rich on this because this is her bag. Katie, I came up with Chicago. She's one of the funniest people I've ever met. Truly, no one is funnier as like just like off the cuff, funny joke. No one is faster. No one's funnier. She came in. She was on board. Chris, Katie, and I created it. So we wrote the script. Or we took out the pitch first. This never happened to me. We took it out to like seven places. Five of them gave offers. Five of them were in. And they were like, we want to do the show. And Netflix was just the most promising like pilot commitment, knowing that we'd most likely also get the series. We wrote the pilot. It was super funny. They were immediately like, yep, time to go to series. And Chris, Katie, and I brought on Matt Craig to showrun. Matt Craig from Chicago, and ton of animation experience, which is the one thing we didn't really have. And so he show ran. We just had an amazing team in place. Me, Katie, Chris, Ike, Dave, Richie Schwartz EP'd on it. And we created the show. We got to have a writer's room of all, like, not all, but like very heavy Chicago-centric people. And, you know, it was Bit City in there. It was super fun. We made 16 episodes. The first 8 are out on Netflix right now. The second 8 drops sometime this year, I believe. We don't know yet. And we don't know about a season 2. Animation's a little bit in flux at Netflix right now, but you know, hopefully we get eyeballs on the second 8 and people watch this thing. It's super funny. This character she's that family member that you have, whether it's your aunt or uncle or, you know, next door neighbor. It's that person that comes over to a family events that usually ruins them by saying something, but not in a mean way. And in a very loving way, and they're just unapologetically themselves. And they're also that family member or that friend that if they weren't at Thanksgiving or if they weren't at the birthday, it just wouldn't be as fun. They're the one who.
I mean, we can all picture, and it's such a perfect name, Chicago Party Aunt. You know that it's the aunt. She doesn't have kids, but she's the sister that comes over, does everything that you just said. The kids love her because maybe she sneaks some booze or weed whatever, sleeps around. You know, but the references you guys had, especially if you're from Chicago, you're like, oh my God, this is so hilarious. I've been following the account, but then when you guys created it, and then I saw that, you know, Dave Stassen and Ike was involved in you, and I was like, oh my God, how did I not even know about this? But you know, even though I'm only in Vegas, I'm a world away. You know, it's sure. Like out of sight, out of mind. So I've actually gotten back into acting, John. So thank you for being part of this journey. And
awesome.
I hope that we absolutely get to work together, which it kind of reminds me a little bit of this story. When I went to Cuba in 2017, this time it was legal, unlike back in the late 90s. And on the way there, we got upgraded to first class on Alaska Airlines. So it's like nice. It's not super. But I was watching a movie called Central Intelligence. I watched half of it. And then a month later on the way back, I watched the second half. And I was cracking up. I was laughing. I go, this is one of my new favorite movies. I had no idea that it was your Ike's movie and Dave Stassen's movie until the very end. When I see the credits, I'm like, so there is something very special about people from Chicago and our sense of humor. Because it really hit me. Without even knowing, like, oh, my friend actually created this or wrote it.
Yes. Yeah.
Amazing. Amazing.
Peer viewing. Yeah. Yeah. That movie's so funny. And I, you know, that script was written when I was still in Chicago. And that's how, like, you just never know in this town, like, how stuff can be shelved and come back. And, like, I remember reading that script and being like, I was like, I have to write a script. I have to write a movie script because this, and it'll never be as good as this because this is so good. And it made me like inspired and intimidated. And I was just like, God, like so fucking good. They're such a good writing team. And I've read like, I think like six of their scripts now. And every one is just, it's so in like, at least my head of like, when I'm reading, I'm like, I know exactly how this is going to play out on the screen. It's so funny. They're so clear and concise and their jokes they're hard and funny jokes. It's just like, they're so good. They're so good.
So good. And you mentioned something and it's true. You never know how long a project is going to take. You even mentioned it earlier where you're on the set of Superstore and this guy has the script or the idea for American Auto. This was what, three years ago, you know, and then other stories take 10 years, 20 years. Some happen overnight, but even overnight means it's a year, you know,
it's so long. It's crazy. I mean, with American Auto, I remember being in my fitting for the pilot, which was in March of 2020. And we had just shut down our Chicago party ant room for a week because of COVID. We were like, we think this is bigger. And we shut down a room. We sent everyone home. And I went to my fitting from there. And I remember being in the fitting. I was like, I don't think we're going to film this pilot next week. And they were like, yes, we are. Within 20 minutes of leaving the fitting, it was like, we are canceling everything. And I was like, motherfucker, like this pilot's so funny. It's gone. And then I was like, it's gone. And by the grace of whatever, we were so lucky. So many shows just like, specifically at NBC, were just like, they were like, we're shutting down. We're not turning the lights back on. This one and one other one made it to, we didn't shoot the pilot until the following October. And then we didn't get the pickup until the fucking following October. This show has been 3 years in the making. Like you just, and until we were honestly there the first day and we were shooting episode two, I was like, it's not happening. And I'm appreciative of it, but like it happened. It just happened. And yeah, you never know. You never know, man. Overnight is at least a year here. And there are things that come off the shelf after 15, 20 years. It's wild.
It's wild. It's crazy. So, you know, folks, never give up. For those of you that joined us, we're just wrapping things up. But thank you guys so much for being here. My guest today has been John Barinholtz, an old friend from Chicago who's really found some great success in Hollywood. He's trying to figure out a way to stop working and letting his wife do all the work. But, you know, let's get your kids into acting so they can pick up some acting gigs. And then you and I can just travel around the world in a van doing a travel show or something.
Well, you're fine. Then I'll have to pay for their therapy bills when they get older because they'll be child actors. And, you know, we'll have to deal with that whole thing.
Yeah. It never ends. It never ends, my friend. John, buddy, thank you so much for taking this. I really want to talk to your dad as well. And I hope to reconnect with Ike as well. But you just brought back so many memories of Chicago, of my early days in LA, and just the struggle and the hustle. Never give up, man.
Hey man, so good to see you. I'm going to part with one thing. Are we allowed to talk about drugs on the show? Is that okay?
Not only are you allowed, it's very much encouraged.
The first time I did mushrooms was with you, and I was out here visiting, and it was you, me. We
didn't talk about drugs. I thought this was going to be about your drug experience. I'm kidding. Please. Okay.
You. This is 20 years ago now. I don't know. You, me, Ike, Rich Tellerico, and we did mushrooms at the Curson house and that Ike was living in. And I remember being like, people talk about psychedelics as like, you know, having like profound impact. It really was just like, I didn't think going to culture, I was like, I'm going to shroom every day. I didn't. I was like, that was great. I don't want to do it again for like 2 years, but I loved it. It really just such like a fond memory of like a life-changing experience. And you were part of it. And like, I just remember being like, oh, this is great. And everything that's great that comes about with good drugs, in moderation, of course, it was just something that, you know, also has been very important to me in the creative process, where like every couple of years I do something that's like, it's a little bit like focus reframing and mind reshifting of just like kind of remembering your connection to this earth and that can help, and to other people. And you were there at the ground floor at that.
Wow. Thank you so much for sharing that. And, you know, it's like drugs, quote unquote. I don't consider that drugs, you know, because it comes from the earth, like marijuana.
Yes.
You know, and I've never been a marijuana guy, but it's crazy to think that the perception has really changed. We're now people, it's recommended that you do that. Yes. Maybe microdosing, not what we did, but still, I mean, I remember a few other, and we never did it that much, but I remember other mushroom stories. And I don't think this would have probably been after that, where it was with Ike, of course, and Myers, yep. Josh Myers.
Yeah.
And we were supposed to split it four ways, I think.
This is this time.
Okay. So we were supposed to split it four ways. But yes. Then Josh was like, oh, no, I'm not going to do it. I'm with Missy, you know, with his girlfriend at the time. Yes. And so we're like, oh, okay. We took him at face value. So we split it three ways.
Yes.
So or four ways. We were supposed to probably split it five ways. We
split it five ways. And there's still supposed to be some left over. And we split it four ways. And then Josh came downstairs and was like, where's mine? And we were like, you said you were going to do it. And I guess he was joking or something, whatever it was. He was fucking pissed. And he's like, okay.
And then he had to do all the work because I was like, I don't feel well or whatever. He goes, here, you're going to have some orange juice.
Yep.
He was like Papa Bear taking care of everyone. Yep, I still remember Rich. I think it was that same time where it was like it started and he was laying on the couch and he had a blanket here. 4 hours later, I look over and the only thing that changed was the blanket was up here. And then I think later when he went outside, I go, where have you been? He goes, oh, I was talking to Frank Sinatra. Yes. There was a photo of Frank Sinatra with his pork pie hat. And I guess Rich was there for a few hours just, oh, Frank, if I could be as cool as you. So
verbatim.
Well, I'm glad it turned out to be a good influence and not.
Yes, absolutely.
Oh, so enjoyable. Well, thank you for bringing up my past drug use. I'm not going to show this to my mom because she wouldn't understand the difference. But if you want to get back together and shroom again, man, I would love. Yeah, everyone, let's give John a big round of applause. Thank you so much for being here. Thank you, everyone that worked here. Thank you so much. It means a lot that you guys were here. So. I think on that note, I would love to reconnect. I mean, if we could do this even once every few months, but especially once your show is out, maybe once our show is out, once we're working together, I'd love to keep doing this because there's just so much more to cover, but I think this has been a tight almost 2 hours.
Yeah. It's been a while. Buddy, thank you so much. What a treat. So great to see you. And you're the greatest.
Please send my salutations to Ike, but also very much to Alan and Peggy. Please tell them that they're in my heart. I can't wait till they move out to LA so I can maybe break bread with you guys again and get together. I also want to say thank you to everyone. Please make sure that you go over to Instagram.com/John Barinholtz. There's also gluefactoryshow.com. If you want to connect with me, it's paulvato.com. And you can buy my new book, The Vato Sutra, basically. It's called The Cama Sucia, which in Spanish means the dirty bed. It's basically a list of all these horrific sex moves, but it's on Amazon now. I can't believe that it got on Amazon. If you go to vato.tv, you can find it there. But more importantly, make sure that you follow John and tune into American Auto, which is on NBC. And all of his other projects. So, John, again, thank you for your time, buddy.
Thanks, buddy. Thanks, everyone.